You are listening to Business Day Spotlight.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight podcast for everything good and bad in the world of economics and the world of business. And today it's looking like it's going to be quite an interesting one. We've just come from the G20 summit over the weekend, where the biggest 20 economies in the world came together to discuss the way forward. They meet annually, I guess, to discuss what's going to be happening for the rest of the year and some of the current things that are going on. My name is Muriwa Gavaza, and I'm going to be your host, and I'm joined in studio by economics business writer, that is Asha Speckman, who writes for the Sunday Times, Business Times, together with the Business Day. Now, Asha was actually at the G20. I was a bit jealous because she got to go to, it was Osaka, right?
Yes.
Okay, she got to go to Osaka in Japan and actually, you know, mingle with some of the world leaders. So she's going to be in studio just letting us know about what was happening there. And then we're just going to be talking about how all of this could be affecting South Africa, the continent, and what the outlook is for the global economy going forward. How are you, Asha?
I'm well, thank you, Madhu. I hope you're well, too.
Okay. So, how was the weekend? How were your travels? How was the, I guess, the vibe at the G20? I've never been to one of those. I don't know what's, is there a vibe? Do people, or is it just, you know, seriousness the whole time, decorum, economics? Like, can you just tell us what that experience was like?
It was my first time as well, so in fact I didn't know what to anticipate.
Yeah.
You know, I think with a lot of these type of events, it's a spectacle really. It's, you know, it's all the pomp and ceremony of having all of these leaders in one place, and I mean, so you can imagine the protocol, you know, and everything that goes with it. But I think definitely, I mean, this summit itself was just highly anticipated, because of course, you know, the American and Chinese leaders.
Yes.
Of course, you know, this overarching elephant in the room.
Yeah. So was the elephant really addressed? I think the I think that might be, you know, one of the biggest questions, and you can just tell us perhaps what some of the highlights were of the weekend. You know, I know that as far as the US-China thing is concerned, we heard that things were relaxed on the Huawei front. You know, were there any other concessions that were made? Are soy farmers in America going to be given reprieve? Like, what happened?
Mudua, this will be an interesting one to watch. And I mean, if I just before we launch into that, I mean, I think there was a moment of amusement. Now, you may or may not know that, you know, it's a standard for press are not actually allowed into the plenary sessions. So we were confined to the media. There's a large media room with, you know, television sets, and I think that was really from the actual program itself. That's you know, sort of the level of our engagement, and then we just, you know, we find our way around the summit, and our way to people.
Yeah.
And there was an amusing moment, I think, at one stage where you know, a whole lot of us, we were watching the screens, and Trump was seated next to some of his compatriots, and they were, you know, there was, I think the chair at the time, the chair of the meeting, had asked them to sort of give some remarks and just agree to sort of, you know, this open rules-based system of trading.
Yeah.
And of course, we know that Trump is the problem in the room.
Yeah.
And there he was, you know. And there he was sort of agreeing and making promises that, you know, he's probably unlikely. I mean, he probably went to bed and forgot about his his statements. But it was amusing. I mean, we all shared that collective you know, bewilderment as the press, and then, you know, it was hilarious. But just in terms of that agreement, so I mean, while, you know, it did manage to it managed to ease investors' concerns. Really, I mean, as you saw, sort of, you know, the stock markets improved slightly afterwards. But there seems to be a skepticism, you know, in the aftermath. And I think, I mean, at least one consultancy, I mean, I think they're an economic consultancy based in London, Capital Economics. And they've said that, look, you know, as early as 2020, that's next year, that with all this excitement, sort of, you know, may die down, and in fact, we just, you know, we like to see a reverse. And in fact, Trump may just impose those tariffs he's been threatening all along, those additional tariffs. So it's interesting because, I mean, as you know, also, you know, Trump is approaching an election, and he's going to try and pander to his constituents.
So, I guess, you know, Trump aside, because I think, like you said, he was probably the main thing that was there, the main highlight. That was probably the main talking points people wanted to know about, that meeting between President Xi and Trump, and what was going to happen on that side. But there's South Africa. Right. What type of delegation actually went there? Apart, because I think I saw just from press coverage, I had seen obviously the president, and then I think Minister Patel. Was there anyone else there from the South African contingent? And as media, I guess who else was there?
Yeah, so it South Africa had a quite a small delegation. I mean, typically, I think, you know the history of the G20 started around 1999, looking at global financial stability, and then, you know, post the 2008-2009 economic recession, you know, the summit was expanded, and obviously the list of topics, and South Africa's found itself on this as a member of this elite group, but we still, you know, it's mainly heads of state, mainly finance ministers, and you know, we had our minister for international relations and cooperation, Dr. Naledi Pandor.
Okay.
She was there to support the president. We also had there was a session on health, and unfortunately I didn't attend that. But our health minister, Dr. Zweli Mkhize, was also in attendance. Minister Tito Mboweni, finance minister, and he's director general, also held court at the G20 summit.
Ooh, held court.
As well as sort of we had, you know, it was myself and I think the only other media represented from South Africa was the SABC.
Okay.
And we had sort of various, you know, other officials. I think from a support perspective, Ramaphosa had a large contingent, but I mean he had very few ministers, as was to be expected.
So as a country, are we, is South Africa benefiting, right, from actually being there, one? And I think you said just now that South Africa is the only country that's part of the G20. So are they driving the Africa agenda forward, or is it about them ratifying what's already there? How big, how much of an equal voice do they have in the 20?
So I think this is also, I mean, if you consider some of the issues that have been raised within the World Trade Organization forum, to start with, you know, it's about, as you say, it's the proportion, you know, proportional power. It's about, so from an anecdotal perspective, you know, what I've heard, and just in speaking to some of the officials who've been participating in some of the meetings, it's just about how do we force the hand of larger developed nations to give smaller developing economies and those emerging markets a greater voice at the table. And I think that's a debate that they have not yet won.
Okay.
Although, as you may be aware, President Cyril Ramaphosa met with BRICS members, and you know, we had Brazil, Russia, China was there as well. And so they had a meeting prior to the commencement of the summit, where they were going to agree on just exactly sort of, you know, what it is that Africa needs to, or rather what it is that the smaller nations need to advance in the summit. The president's reports that they feel that there has been success on that front. Of course, I mean, South Africa is an important voice in any case, in the global sphere, it being sort of, you know, the more developed economy on the continent.
That's true.
And as you know as well, the focus, you know, in the absence of growth globally, the focus is on Africa still as the next frontier for growth. And so we're seeing a lot of discussions around investment still heading to Africa.
No, I think more than anything else, we just wanted to get a sense of what the South African voice was like there. Because I think for people, for the uninitiated, we sort of see the president and his ministers going to some of these global conferences, engaging with the leaders, and we're actually wondering, does it even have any bearing or any impact on the normal person on the streets, or is it just, you know, yet another talk shop? Because I think even locally, people have also accused certain local gatherings as being talk shops. So imagine when it's now on the world stage, we're now like, if the local talk shops are not helping us as ordinary people, then something that's going on, I guess, with the top 20 so-called economies, is it really going to, affect us? So, yeah.
I think there will be a trickle-down effect. You know, as you may know, some of the issues on the agenda for the G20 was this implementation of sustainable development goals in Africa. And, I mean, that really is something that was, it was about 17 global goals set by the United Nations General Assembly in 2015. Mm. And those goals come to fruition or mature in 2030. You know, I mean, the top five, really, I mean, they sound frivolous, but it's, you know, these are bread and butter issues in some of, you know, our poorest economies here in our developing nations. And, I mean, like, the top five include the elimination of poverty, zero hunger, good health, well-being, quality education, gender equality, some of the things that we've begun to grapple with. But we have a responsibility as the more developed nations to advance these causes on behalf of those that don't have a seat at the table. And I mean, one thing that the presidency's reported is that there was support for these sustainable development goals. So there's a sense that the developed nations are taking note, and that there is support for it. And of course, there's also something called the Compact Initiative with Africa. That's also it's one of those. It's run sort of adjacent to the G20.
Okay.
And I mean, really, that is also, it's also around sort of looking at how there can be further investment channeled to Africa. Mm. And so I see that you know, there's enhanced roles, and we need to still understand from the president and unpack that. What does it mean? Enhanced roles for the World Bank, the African Development Bank, and the International Monetary Fund. So it sounds that there is sort of more support coming to the continent. But then also, I mean, I would say that it's not necessarily a lost cause or talk shop for South Africa, because we found, so the president was engaged in, you know, numerous formal settings, but he also held some informal bilateral talks, which of course are not open to the media. So, I remember with dismay, I was so excited when we were in the room where Ramaphosa was meeting with Japan's prime minister. He also met with the Chinese president, and I remember we were afforded a sort of a 2-minute photo opportunity, and before we knew it, the 2 minutes was up and we were shooed out. So that's the extent to which we as press engage. But as I said, you know, for South Africa, it seems that it was a fruitful occasion. I mean, he met with many leaders, but at the same time, he also had a commitment. I mean, one of the highlights, I think, for the South African delegation was, you know, sort of President Ramaphosa's Arab counterparts had reconfirmed an over 10 billion rand commitment. As you know, that this you know was part of it was pledged initially.
So the money is coming.
Investment drive. The money is coming.
Okay.
The money is coming. As you know as well, that there's also growing South Africa's fostering closer ties with Japan. I think for me, what was interesting was to witness. I was part of the. I sat in on the meeting with President Cyril Ramaphosa, chaired by the Trade and Industry Minister Ibrahim Patel. And they met with businessmen from Japan.
Okay.
And there were a few South African businessmen in attendance as well. And I think it was encouraging to witness how, you know, South Africans unite and they were able to strategize and rally. And I mean, you know, the relationship between business and government previously has been fraught with tension.
Yeah.
But they put on a united front. And so it was interesting to see that when the Japanese businessmen were able, you know, to express their concerns with the South African economy. I mean, we saw issues of, you know, the energy supply. Mm-hmm. And you know that has to do with Eskom and those load shedding and the power outages earlier on in this year. That was on the table as well.
Yeah.
There were issues around policy certainty in the mining sector.
Okay.
There were issues as well around... If I think about it, I mean, I think sort of, you know, one of the other businessmen asked about support, you know, just in terms of regulations, visa regulations, just the business friendly environment. And those were some of the questions that came to the fore. And, you know, the president was able to respond to that. And I think what was interesting is that there is progress being made. One of the special investment envoys appointed by President Cyril Ramaphosa last year to mobilize investment for South Africa, Phumzile Langeni.
Yeah.
I spoke to her afterwards, and she was very optimistic about South Africa and Japan
and the
prospects.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things, if I can lift from some of the comments that she'd made, I mean, one of the things she said is that, you know, they've been not necessarily looking at sort of investment into the traditional sectors.
Yeah.
They've been looking at sort of, you know, technology investment. And she was saying that, you know, it's important that we align ourselves with Japan increasingly, even though, you know, there has been sort of an alignment towards China in recent years.
Yeah.
But Japan is also still a big economy and a big investor. I mean, Japan is South Africa's sixth largest investor.
Mm.
And in terms of our total foreign direct investment, it accounts for 26%.
Oh, wow.
So
wait, hold on. Did you say 26%?
26% of South Africa's total foreign direct investment.
It's coming from Japan?
From Japan.
What?
Yes.
That is a large number.
Yes.
And especially if you're saying that they're the sixth, that's incredible.
Yes. So besides sort of infrastructure investment, you know, Phumzile, one of the things she's mentioned, and I mean, I think just to illustrate, you know, why she was so excited, I mean, one thing she mentioned was that between 1985 and to date, Japan has invested around £60 billion into the British economy. You know, they were invited at a time during the Thatcher, Margaret Thatcher administration, when there was just sort of mass unemployment, and they came in, and she was talking about sort of, you know, the skills development that followed as well. So Japan is about a holistic investment, and they take their time to understand and to foster that relationship. And I think because they have a long-term outlook, and that's what excites South Africa about Japan.
So from that point of view, about that long-term view, the fact that they are investing holistically, like you said, I want to take it back to the session that you said you sat on with the businessmen, with the president, etc. Do you get a sense that they know and understand what's going on in South Africa from the issues that they were raising with the president? Like, you can tell that these people have actually done their research on what's going on in South Africa, like they actually understand, or is it a broad stroke sort of approach that they're taking?
We already have quite a number of Japanese corporations invested in South Africa. So you can imagine that there are likely to be business forums on the ground here as well.
Mm.
Some of these organizations that were represented in the room actually do have satellite offices based in South Africa already, and for them they just sort of sought clarity. I think they are familiar with the prospects in South Africa. Perhaps maybe the questions was just sort of, you know, the aftermath of the wasted 9 years, if I can report it as that. I mean, this is just some of the consequences we're going to have to live through for the time being. But I think there's a deep, deep confidence in President Cyril Ramaphosa and his administration. I mean, I cornered one of the businessmen afterwards, and you know, he'd been very, very, he was interrogating President Cyril Ramaphosa. And when I spoke to him afterwards and I asked him, I asked him about kind of the risks that he still sees, you know, in the South African economy.
Yeah.
And he just, you know, very politely told me that, you know, there may still be risks, but he's very encouraged that there is change. He's actually, from President Cyril Ramaphosa's narrative that he spoke or he provided, there is change that is on the way. And he said to me, look, the businessman said, there may be risks, but they choose to be optimistic and positive.
Okay. And do you get a sense from, you know, such engagements that people have confidence in President Ramaphosa because he's a bit, how much of a factor is the fact that he's a businessman? Is that sort of playing into the confidence that foreign investors have in President Ramaphosa? And do you think ostensibly that works into the confidence that they have on South Africa as a whole?
I think that's an immense strength on the president's part, because, you know, business people, I think, are usually devoid of sentiment. I would think so. I think it's the market that really, you know, is fueled by sentiment.
Yeah.
And you know, as I mentioned earlier, Pumzi Langeni narrating that Japanese business people want to understand. They take their time to understand and to build the relationships, and I think that's very much because Ramaphosa is able. They come from an equal footing. He's able to understand their challenges. He's able to articulate their challenges, which was, I think, very important, because he didn't shy away. And I think that's what I think the businessman appreciated.
Ramaphosa, so he was candid?
He was candid about our challenges.
Okay.
He was candid about the land issue. He was candid about inequality in the country.
Wow.
He mentioned everything. And, you know, at one point, if it had been someone else, another type of president, I would have cringed, but I know that in sort of in being candid, the president also needed to assure them that you know, he's not taking them for a ride, that they are concerned. He understands that we need to align ourselves with partners that are going to help South Africa achieve its objectives, and he understands fully that, you know, that we need to be able to deliver the return on investment to the people that we are trying to entice to our shores.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so that's us. We're with Asha. And I guess as we round up the discussion, what's your outlook, you know, especially given, I think at the start of each year, I remember actually writing with you just around what the outlook was for the SA economy for 2019, and we touched a little bit around what the global economic growth is going to be looking like. So I guess for you, I guess between now and the next G20 summit sometime next year, are we looking positive or negative across the globe? Because, you know, I think there's been a lot of stuff said about a global economic slowdown and the like. Obviously, US-China has factored into some of this slowdown. You know, do you think that sentiment has improved?
I think the truce between the US and China has certainly eased concerns somewhat. But I think we are probably still in uncertain territory.
Yeah.
Head of the IMF, Christine Lagarde, at the conclusion of the G20 summit, she welcomed the recent development between China and the US, but then she again stressed that in fact global growth is not in a healthy space at the moment.
Yeah.
I mean, if I can even, a tangible sign of that was that so at the start of every month, there's a gauge on manufacturing PMIs, purchasing, yeah, that those indices that indicate sort of the health of the manufacturing sector, rather sort of sentiment, gauge sentiment. So globally, that those indices have indicated that the global economy is slowing, and there seems to be, though, that there is likely to be a stay on hiking of interest rates in the US. There's also sort of more looser monetary policy that is likely to be introduced in many of the global. So, it's a sticky situation. It's uncertain.
Yeah.
I mean, in the South African economy as well, I think, there are some positive developments, but they also still too uncertain to gauge, or rather, there are positive developments, but I think it's still too soon to get an indication of whether we're likely to see sort of an improvement, a significant improvement. Certainly, there's still lower growth forecast for the South African economy. So whatever happens between now and our investment summit later this year, the president has announced that it's going to be held between the 5th and 7th of November. Between now and then, and between next year as well, I think we're still likely to find ourselves in uncertain territory regarding growth, and that that will obviously demand, international demand may remain muted, and as we know, that's not too encouraging for exports. But certainly, just it's I think the mood coming out of G20 was certainly lighter.
Yeah.
But I think people are still uncertain.
Uncertain. So the global economy outlook is still a bit uncertain. That was us with Asher Speckman, who is the economics writer for the Sunday Times Business Times, together with the Business Day, letting us know what happened in Osaka, Japan last week. She attended the G20 summit. And some of the key takeaways from that is the fact that a lot of the discussion hinged around what's been going on with the US and China. The lightening of those trade negotiations has certainly helped, and also the fact she's also highlighting that South Africa as a voice is quite important, and it seems that there's a lot of global interest, specifically from the Japanese, just around investment in South Africa and actually being a holistic investor for the long term, and that for the time being, prospects for the economy are still, we're still looking at them a bit dovishly, but it remains to be seen, because unfortunately things in economics always happen in the long term. It never happens just like that. So thank you so much to everyone who was listening to our show. If you're interested in more insights from Asher, you can definitely look out for more of her articles in the Business Day and the Business Times. So that's been it for today's show. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. On Twitter, we are hashtag BD Spotlight, and then you can subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our producer, that is Paige Muller. And then from myself, Mudiwa Gavaza, and the rest of the team, it's a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning. Remember that Business Day Spotlight is a multimedia live production.